Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches.
Our first speaker is our greatest royal biographer. Hugo Vickers has written biographies of the Queen Mother, the Duchess of Windsor, and his terrific book, The Quest for Queen Mary. And his new book is about Clarissa Avon, the wife of Anthony Eden, who was our Oldie of the Year at, I think, the world record age at 100. She died a year later at 101 in 2021. And Hugo is here to talk about Clarissa, Muse to Power, the untold story of Clarissa Eden, Countess of Avon. Ladies and gentlemen, Hugo Vickers.
You can hear me all right? Great. Well, I'm so happy to be here to talk about Clarissa Churchill, later Lady Eden, finally Countess of Avon, 1920 to 2021. And in this grisly age of plastic celebrities dissecting petals and sprinkling them over salads, it has been a huge joy for me to explore a life of real substance. And we must celebrate remarkable women, and here was somebody enigmatic, fascinating, enjoyably difficult, highly intelligent, and very beautiful. Well connected in her youth, bohemian in her upbringing, she found herself propelled at the age of 32 into the very heart of national life as the wife of the Foreign Secretary and later Prime Minister. Not many political wives have also been friends of Gertrude Stein, Jean Cocteau, Orson Welles, and Greta Garbo. Clarissa was remote, she could be dismissive, and she was certainly acerbic. As a young woman, she only ever spoke if she had something of interest to say, by which I mean something of interest to her. She came to be sorry to be remembered for her speech at Gateshead in the middle of the Suez Crisis, the only political speech she ever made. In the past few weeks, I've really felt as if the Suez Canal was flowing through my drawing room. To a sophisticated audience like you, I don't need to give a resume of her life. Suffice it to say that she escaped the expected life of a debutante. She studied philosophy at Oxford with the great dons, despite not being even enrolled as an undergraduate, much to the annoyance of Philip Toynbee. She worked for Vogue, for Alexander Korda, and for George Weidenfeld. And then she had the political interlude, followed by 20 years of looking after Anthony Eden, and then 44 years of widowhood, when she even took up deep-sea diving. When, as a teenager, in the 1960s, I used to see her coming down the aisle of St. George's Chapel at the end of a garter ceremony, she, a generation younger than the wives of the other knights, I never dreamt that I would one day be her friend. And I still don't know why she chose me, but it worked, and it will be forever one of the most great and enriching features of my life. I can offer you a few vignettes. Some pistol shots go off in the early chapters of this book. Who was Jack Churchill's father? Might Winston have married her mother instead of Clementine Hosier? And who was Clarissa's father? And later, why did such a beautiful and sought-after woman remain unmarried until the age of 32? Well, DNA has now proved that Jack Churchill was a Boscawen, the son of Viscount Falmouth. Then I have five letters that no one has ever seen, which show that Winston was in pursuit of her mother, Lady Gwendolen, in 1907. Clarissa never showed those letters to anybody, not even to Martin Gilbert, Winston's official biographer. There was a flirtation, but then he left on his African journey, and in the meantime she became engaged to his brother Jack. The letters are fascinating as they cross each other. Winston, of course, was not exactly the most impassioned writer of love letters, since he had a habit of writing about himself, just as he liked talking about himself. But he must have got a shock when he got the message in Mombasa, and Jack and Lady Gwendolen married on the 8th of August 1908. 3 days later, he proposed to Clementine, so make of that what you will. Clarissa accepted that her biological father was Harold Louis Baker, the warden of Winchester College. highly intelligent man, Craven Scholar, Hartford Scholar, Eldon Scholar, President of the Oxford Union, MP in Asquith's government, and a Privy Councillor before the age of 40. Then why did she remain single so long? Well, she had a long affair with Raimund von Hofmannsthal. He was the son of the famous Austrian poet, and he was a noted ladies' man. When accused in White's of being a womaniser, he denied it. "I am not a womaniser," he said. "I have been completely faithful to the same two women for the last 25 years. I maintain that this is about the last biography of a new person, which, by which I mean somebody who hasn't been written about before, that can be done with letters. She and all her friends were wonderful letter writers, and the stories of their lives unfold in their writing. She loved to read. She read voraciously and very fast. I once saw her devour a novel in the course of one afternoon. She loved art. She loved music, especially opera. And in later life, she very often used to go to the opera with Lord Goodman. And at the end of a performance, when there were dead bodies strewn across the stage, covered in blood, he would rise from his seat with a certain difficulty and say, 'Nothing that a good lawyer couldn't have resolved.' At Oxford, she was a kind of Zuleika Dobson. In her papers, I found a letter to her from Trim, Oxford, and on the envelope, a scribbled note from Raymond Carr to the effect that he'd come round to see her and found her out and would return later. A note from one would-be boyfriend on the envelope of another. And I relish her early friendship with James Pope Hennessy as he conducted her around the Wren churches in the city of London, as interested in his attentive young companion as in the monuments they inspected. Well, over the years, I came to greatly relish her quality of positive negativity. I told her once that an Australian friend in common, James Fairfax, had invited me to lunch in his country house, Ratford Park at Bowral, which is between Canberra and Sydney. He sent a car for me to collect me for lunch and then drive me on to Sydney. That is 178 miles by road. Did Clarissa respond, "How kind of him?" Not at all. Her comment was, "He must have been desperate for company." And her way of leaving a dinner party in Patmos was to say to me, not quite in the earshot of the host, "I think we've exhausted the social possibilities of this meal, don't you?" You will recall that Nicholas Shakespeare came to talk here last year. In 1981, I asked a few friends to dinner, all of my age and Clarissa, a generation older. And after dinner, Nicholas launched into an intriguing monologue about how many vibrators were being bought by women these days. And if I got at all concerned how my distinguished guest was taking this, I needn't have worried. She suddenly volunteered, "Do you mean to say that you can get circumcised ones and uncircumcised ones?" She used to say that Cecil Beaton brought out the worst in everyone, and this is very much evidenced by her letter to him about the Profumo affair, written, needless to say, in that Philip Larkin summer of 1963. This is what she wrote. "We lunched at Clarence House for Jock Whitney, and after waiting for hours before lunch, in came the Queen and Profumo, who had been at a Privy Council together. This was the day before the balloon went up, and Val was in black with some prescience. Selwyn Lloyd's reaction to the scandal was, 'I don't believe Jack did any of those things, married to a beautiful girl like Val.' The whole place has gone quite crazy on the scandal. A sort of hysteria of gossip and salaciousness, as if London were a small village. Marples is said to be the naked man in the mask. Duncan Sands is said to be involved, also Soames. And Maurice Macmillan appears in a photograph, although he says his face has been stuck on someone else's body by the communists. Politically, the rebels are increasing and absolutely furious because the meeting of the 1922 committee was steamrolled by the whips and the motions of no confidence in the Prime Minister not allowed. My view is that Harold Macmillan obviously, will stick on and just refuse to go. But everyone else, including Oliver Poole, thinks he'll have to go or there will be an upheaval in the Conservative Party." And this is the line I particularly like at the end of the letter. "I must say, I couldn't have wished a more squalid exit for a man I've always disliked and distrusted." Likewise, she was very funny when Ronald Tree invited the recently widowed Clemmy, after Sir Winston died, and the Soameses to come and stay with them in Barbados in 1965. The Avons were staying there because their villa wasn't quite ready, and Clemmy was in mourning, so nobody could be invited in. So they had 10 days, 4 meals a day, with no one to alleviate the tension. Again to Cecil Beaton, she wrote, "Have you ever seen Mary Soames at breakfast? It is the time of day when she feels her most vital and informative." I recommend to all oldies the way that she left this world. On the 14th of November, 2021, aged 101, she had a chocolate souffle and a glass of champagne, and the next morning she didn't wake up, which was, I think, an enviable way to go. Thank you.
You have been listening to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Oldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial" as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial".